Stevenson, Daniel Fay, representing the defendant appellant Scott Stevenson. Mr. Fay.
My name is Attorney Dan Fay. Also representing Scott Stevenson is Elizabeth Kavanagh-Szczesinski. Mr. Stevenson pled guilty to two counts of violating 944.205. At the trial level, motions were brought challenging the constitutionality of the statute. The Court of Appeals certified the case up to this court. The issue in this case is resolving the tension between the fundamental right to privacy and the rights under the First Amendment of the United States Constitution. That's what this case will decide, as to how that tension between those two should be resolved. Both of those rights, as stated by the U.S. Supreme Court in Cox Broadcasting versus Cohen, are deeply rooted traditions and are equally important. The question is, how do we resolve those two rights? The statute that's being challenged is so sweeping in what it prohibits that it impacts upon First Amendment rights. Generally, there's a presumption of constitutionality in statutes. However, because this statute impacts upon the First Amendment, there is no presumption of constitutionality. The presumption of constitutionality isn't here. The burden is on the state to show that this statute is constitutional. In my brief, I set forth numerous examples of how this statute prohibits legitimate expression. I'm not going to belabor those examples. And they were all pointed toward the basic rationale regarding an overbreath challenge. And it's namely to prevent the chilling effect on protected speech and to prevent selective enforcement. In order to demonstrate to a reviewing court, an appellant is allowed to show examples. And that's what I've tried to do. I have no doubt that Mr. Stevenson's conduct should be illegal in this state. However, it should only be illegal if there's a properly drawn statute that prohibits that type of conduct.
Do you think, counsel, that this court can, as suggested by the state, could use a narrowing construction which would deal only with reasonable expectation of privacy?
No, I don't, Your Honor. I don't believe this statute on its face is reasonably susceptible to limitation. The legislature has prohibited any visualization by photographs, videotapes, painting of a person nude without their consent. That's what the legislature has said. And when we come to this balancing act between the rights of privacy and the rights of free speech, and those are all important public policy considerations, but they should be properly addressed by the legislature.
Mr. Fay, how would you distinguish this case from State versus Steele, where this court found that in order to have the statute in regard to minors and exhibiting materials to minors be constitutional, that there should be a limiting interpretation? That's really the same thing the state is offering here, is it not?
That's correct. And the problem with Steele, as it applies to this case, is the court had some language to work with, some language within the statute to work with. We don't have that in this case.
Well, what the state is asking, as I understand it, as Justice Wilcox mentioned, is to basically put into the statute the idea that the statute would be applicable only where there was a reasonable expectation of privacy. Now, if you compare what we did in Thiel, with what we refused to do in lounge management versus the town of Trenton. In the lounge management case, we were asked basically to do a total rewrite of the ordinance involved. That isn't what the state's asking us to do here.
Essentially, they are, Your Honor. They're asking that a fifth element of the offense be in there. And secondly, Your Honor, is even if the language of the state was adopted, we still have not made it constitutional. Because the question is, where is the defendant when the violation occurs? For example,
go ahead, sir.
For example, if Scott Stevenson illustrated the Starr report, if he illustrated what the president supposedly did in the Oval Office, he was never there, he never invaded their privacy, but yet he could make a visual representation. And the state isn't suggesting that that language be stricken. If Scott Stevenson, in one of the counts that he was charged with, but which was plea bargained away, was that he had videotaped the act of making love between him and his girlfriend. Let's assume for a moment that he talks to someone about it. Clearly that would be constitutional. Maybe not gentlemanly, but it still would be within his constitutional right to draw a picture of what occurred. And clearly she did not have a right to privacy then, as the state sees it. And that's why I think this is an important question, but it's one properly dealt with by the legislature, not by this court.
Well, according to you, the legislature couldn't do it either.
If I understand Chief Justice's question, they didn't do it in this statute. But I don't think they gave it a whole lot of thought when you consider how limited the legislative history is in this case.
Could they make it constitutional?
Yes.
How?
I think they could follow the way Oregon did it, where you look at, did the person view the person in a place of privacy, and you eliminate the language of visual representations, and you have both people in the same place at the same time. But when you try and legislate the ability of an artist to draw, that's going too far.
So your position is this statute would allow Mr. Balestrieri to do a visual representation, that is a cartoon, of this bench nude.
This statute would prohibit that.
That would prohibit that. Even though I have no reasonable expectation of personal privacy when I'm on the bench.
That's correct. That's exactly what this statute says, and that's exactly
that's
what
it,
and in fact,
you have got the stomach.
That exact same example.
I'm going to sit up straight.
Yes. That exact same example counsel used before the trial court is to say that statute would prohibit me from drawing the Supreme Court naked on the bench.
Okay, and that would, so you would be, without my knowledge and consent, you're going to depict me naked. Let me tell you, you do not have my consent, okay? And I have no reasonable expectation of personal privacy when I'm on the bench.
That's correct. That's what that statute prohibits. On the simple words of that statute.
Oh, no. Even if I put and has a reasonable expectation of personal privacy, if I put those words in, you'd still be violating the statute. No, you wouldn't violate the statute. So you could do that. Okay.
So you're saying the only way to make this constitutional is to eliminate virtual representation, and it must be visual,
And
that it has to be essentially recorded.
something like a video camera, a camera, a digital camera, etc.
That's correct, Your Honor. So
anything else, if somebody paints a crayon picture, that can't be covered.
That cannot be covered. And that's exactly our point, is when the legislature used the words visual representation, they clearly intended to include paintings. They clearly intended to mean drawings. They covered all the others.
How about reproduction? The statute uses the words virtual representation or reproduction.
I have the same problems with that again, because how in today's society do you prevent selective enforcement? It's no different than the Titan wedding photo that I put forth in my brief. That was painted 400 years ago. When I make a reproduction of that, without that individual's consent or knowledge, and art historians believe that the person who is depicted in that picture was not the model who sat for the picture. And we get into that whole language of who's being depicted. And I think this whole area, when you start talking about reproductions, how, as a matter of public policy, do you control that? This morning as I was shaving and I'm watching TV, there was an ad on for some arthritis medicine. And some woman was saying, all I want to be able to do is bathe my grandchild. And right there on my TV, it showed a little boy naked. It showed his buttocks. Now, if I would have been, for whatever reason, videotaping the news, I would be making a copy of that. And I didn't have that consent. And that person, that little boy, didn't consent to Dan Fay making a copy of it on February 10th. And that's the whole problem with this statute.
Mr. Fay, wouldn't the answer to that, and I don't want to answer for Mr. Balestrieri, but wouldn't the answer to that be that there's implied consent? For instance, when you're talking about the painting of Venus, whatever woman was the model for that painting, certainly you could reasonably infer that there was implied consent that could be reproduced. And couldn't you, in this situation with the little boy and his buttocks exposed on TV, imply consent from the parents who obviously gave consent in the first instance that it could be reproduced? How do you answer that?
Your Honor, when we're talking about a fundamental right, such as the right of free speech, and that's what this statute attempts to regulate. It regulates speech based upon content, namely nudity. There has to be clarity in the drafting of it. That is what has to occur. And when we start talking about, well, this is implied, or was it implied to the prosecutor? We start having a tremendous chilling effect upon what's legal and what's not legal.
Well, if we go to implied consent, that goes to your first one of your points, which is you think that we have to read out visual representation and you have to read out reproduction, because suppose I got a copy of this videotape that Mr. Stevenson made. Now, there are some people who consent to having a videotape of their sexual relations. The fact that I get that videotape and I don't know that Mr. Stevenson has violated this person's privacy, is it implied consent? There are 300 of videotapes around?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And I think that's exactly the danger. When we go down this consent road and saying implied consent, implied by whom?
This is a privacy law, as I see it.
And that's where I disagree.
Okay.
It's a privacy law if you read into it a number of different things.
What do you have to read into it?
You have to read into it the whole concept of privacy. Nowhere in that statute does it discuss privacy at all.
Well, and you have to read in, if I heard you right, that this only applies to the person who is taking the photograph, the motion picture, or the videotape.
As it is currently written, it applies to Dan Fay. When I make...
Yeah, I understand that. But to make it privacy, you probably have to read in that it only applies to the person who's taking the shot.
That's correct. And that statute covers so much more than that.
Wouldn't that be, if you took out visual representation or reproduction, that leave only the verbs that would indicate personal presence, that is, takes a photograph, makes a motion picture, or videotape?
Except, Your Honor, let's assume here that I take a photograph of you on the bench, and I go home to my computer, and I take your face, and I morph it onto a nude. I have depicted you nude, but I have not violated your privacy. I might have held you up to scorn and ridicule, but I have not violated your privacy.
And you haven't violated my privacy because of what?
I never saw you nude.
If you took a picture of me not on the bench, but in my living room, and did that, does that make any difference?
And if I took the picture from standing on the street, through the open window? No, I didn't.
Or on the roof.
If you took the picture... I mean, if it was a picture that you took, you were in my living room, and you took that picture and then morphed it, how does that nuance play into your argument?
Is I haven't invaded your privacy. I haven't invaded your privacy in the sense of seeing you nude. And that's what that statute attempts to regulate. The statute regulates solely content, namely nudity. And when we go down this whole slippery slope of saying what's legal, what's not, what are we going to take out of the statute, this court is having to rewrite the statute. And this is, the area is too complicated for it not to be debated in the legislature, and for them to resolve all of those policy problems that result when you take this statute and you say, look, makes a photograph. Well, a photograph doesn't have to be an accurate representation. It can be a collage of images. And, you know, it happens so many times, the movies. When we're watching movies and we see the naked picture, it's very seldom the actual body of the star. But she's been depicted nude by a photograph. And that's the problem with this statute. Is the statute on its face doesn't deal with the whole concept of privacy. As I said before, that is an important consideration. And it's something that needs to be dealt with. But this court shouldn't rewrite the statute. It should follow the guidance set forth in lounge management. It's not your function.
Faye, you indicated earlier that one of the reasons, or the principal reason underlying the overbreadth doctrine, is to prevent the chilling effect on the exercise of free speech rights and also to get at the issue of selective enforcement. Do you really think that the examples that you've identified are such that this law actually has any real chilling effect on the exercise of free speech rights or would result in selective enforcement? Do you really think that there's any danger that a prosecutor somewhere in this state is going to try to prosecute under this law any of the examples that you've raised? Or that anybody who wants to do any of the things that you've identified is going to feel chilled by this statute?
Yes, Your Honor. Is I look at the example of the Vietnam picture. And I go back to in the 60s, when I was marching around the Capitol, a prosecutor, if I would have walked around with that picture held over my head, in today's climate of child pornography, in today's, I would have been prosecuted.
Well, do you think there's any reasonable likelihood that if someone were to display in any context that particular photo, that some prosecutor somewhere would try to charge them with an offense under this statute? Or that's just a fanciful notion that we shouldn't be worried about when we're talking about a statute which attempts to get at a very real problem in our society?
Wasn't too long ago, Your Honor, that in Cincinnati, some famous photographs by a famous artist who's photographer, Malanthrope, that was, they didn't want them there. In New York City, we have the mayor seeking to close down the Brooklyn Art Museum based upon the fact of nudity.
I think that those cases are issues about whether the state should be subsidizing this sort of exercise of free speech rights, not whether or not there should be censorship or prosecutions under the criminal law, right?
Yes, Your Honor, I can agree with that. However, if you're going to... But the question is, should an individual have to take the risk of a prosecutor using good judgment?
Well, you took the risk in your briefing. Do you think you're going to be prosecuted under this law?
Your Honor.
Of course not.
Because...
Of course not.
Because if I did, the court would have no trouble saying... He shouldn't be prosecuted for that.
Well, if you were, would that be selective prosecution?
Pardon me?
If you were, would it be selective prosecution? Or if you weren't, would it be selective prosecution?
If it were, it clearly would be selective prosecution. And it's clearly selective prosecution that I'm not. Because on the face of my brief, and on the face of the statute, I have probably committed 15 different felonies. But everybody says, well, he won't be prosecuted for that. Why? Well, because he's just being a lawyer. That is selective prosecution.
Or an exemption for lawyers who are making a constitutional challenge for it.
Mr. Fay, you threw out a hypothetical, or at least there was discussed a hypothetical of picture being taken of Justice Bradley and then morphing her head with a photograph of a nude body. Is it your position that the First Amendment would permit such a thing to be done and to have that photograph distributed publicly?
Yes. It's my position that, and if that that is allowed under the First Amendment.
But you got other statutes, I think, that would talk about you're not being able to do that for commercial purposes and use her head.
And clearly, Justice Bradley would have a right under the privacy statutes of the state to bring an action against me if I used that for commercial purposes. But if I used... If I morphed a picture of the president onto a nude body and morphed a picture of Monica Lewinsky onto a nude body solely to make a political statement, that would be clearly protected by the First Amendment.
I have a feeling that somebody did that. in a magazine.
I think you're right on that, Your Honor, that looking at some of the jokes that have been sent to me through the email, through the internet, and the cartoons, those visualizations have already been made, and they are part of political comment. That's what's protected by the First Amendment.
This is the doctrine of not just overbreadth, but substantial overbreadth, correct?
That's correct.
And what do you think the modifier substantial means in this context?
First, Your Honor, I don't think that when we look at the case law, we deal with substantial overbreadth when we're talking about the overbreadth doctrine as it affects content-neutral information. This isn't content-neutral. It's only about one specific. So I don't believe that the burden is that I have to show substantial and real, despite the fact that I have. If we look at the cartoon of Kenneth Starr, we look at the glamour, we look at all of the different places, we look at the possibility that someone, and even though the legislature has said it's important to have books and things in our libraries, under this statute as it's currently written, if I go to the library and check out Joy of Sex and make a photocopy of it or run it through my scanner, I violate the statute. And the deterrent effect of what this has is extremely real and it's substantial. There are numerous examples in our society over and over and over again where a person could be prosecuted.
Counsel, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thomas J. Ballastrieri, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Wisconsin.
Thank you, Your Honor. Over the years, this court, with the help of its friends on the United States Supreme Court, has developed a very large body of law dealing with the subject of attacks on statutes under the overbreadth doctrine. The bottom line of this body of law is that when there is a statute which is overly broad at its margins, but does have a core of proscribed conduct, which the state is legitimately entitled to prescribe under the First Amendment, this court has an obligation to trim off the excess and give the statute a limiting construction when a limiting construction is readily available from either the language or history of the provision and does not pervert the legislative purpose in enacting the statute.
How can we do that without adding an element to this offense?
Well, you can't really. I mean, it's kind of the flip side of the same coin. You can't trim off and give this statute a limiting construction without saying the statute only applies in this situation. And that, of course, is giving it an additional element. The answer is, yeah, they're the same thing. So, therefore, since you can give the statute a limiting construction, you can add an element which limits the scope of the statute under the overbreadth doctrine.
Mr. Ballastrieri, let's just start off. As written, without any limiting construction or trimming off, is 2A valid?
No, I concede that it is, in fact, overly broad.
And you have the same problem, although it's not in this case. 2B may be even more troublesome because it's a possession.
Theoretically, it is certainly as troublesome as sub-1.
Okay, same language in both.
Right.
Okay, for the possession issue. Okay, so 2A, as it stands, does not pass constitutional muster.
Not as it stands. It does apply to some.
Why not? Tell me why not.
It does apply on its face to some conduct which the state is not entitled to regulate.
Like?
Like, for example, publishing a legitimate news picture such as the little Vietnamese girl who had her clothes burned off in the napalm attack.
Okay, that's a legitimate news picture. Does it cover, and on its face it covers reproducing an art, a recognized art?
On its face I would say it probably does, yes.
Or a statue?
Sure.
Okay. We had a statue case, an art case before, which I've now forgotten. But anyway, all right. So that's the problem. So tell me how you're going to trim it and how you're going to add the words.
Well, I've stated the words specifically in my brief at page 14. I've included them in the statute.
Which words?
The words are, to paraphrase the statute, it's unlawful to take certain pictures of people who are nude while that person is nude in circumstances where they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And every one of those words is important in limiting this statute.
Okay. So what about the visual representation, the cartoon?
Cartoon would obviously not be covered under this limitation because the cartoon was not made, at least the cartoon that we have in the brief. I'm not suggesting that we apply this to any cartoon because whether a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the circumstances is a factual question that must be determined under the particular facts and circumstances of that case. And slight variations in the facts can lead to very different conclusions about whether there's a right to privacy. So let's just talk for a moment about the cartoon that appears in Stevenson's brief. Obviously not made while the cartoonist was viewing the three people in a state of undress. That, under the limitation that I have proposed in this statute, would not be illegal under this statute because it was not made while the people were nude in circumstances where they had a reason to expect privacy.
So a cartoon depicting me naked, assuming that I don't know on consent, while I'm on the bench, would be okay?
Not covered. But let's take your example one step further. Let's assume there is a bath.
Not a crime.
I'm sorry?
It wouldn't be a crime.
It would not be a crime under your example. But let me give you an example where it would be a crime. There's a bathroom in this building. Let's say we have one of the people who has access to the bathroom drills a hole in the wall. And while you are in the bathroom with some of your clothes off, draws a cartoon of you in that bathroom with your clothes off. That would be covered. Because that person would be depicting you nude while you are nude in circumstances where you had a reason to expect privacy.
And suppose the state has a security camera in the bathroom, they violate 2A?
They probably would. As a matter of fact, you know, your example is not that far off.
I know it's not.
We've had situations where we have been asked for our opinion on installing security cameras, and we've given the opinion that you can put a security camera in the bathroom as long as it's not aimed at the stalls.
Even without this statute. Why?
Well, because there would be a huge uproar even without the statute if you had security cameras aimed at the stall.
Uproar doesn't mean law. I think that probably would be against the law. But anyway, for the state to make that as an unreasonable violation on search and seizure. But that's not the case. So if there was a security camera, it would violate this law. If it would enable somebody to depict somebody nude.
Without their consent. Now, of course, if you had a sign on the door that said, that warned people that the security camera was there and that if they used the bathroom, they were giving their implied consent to be photographed.
Now,
that would be a different story.
I'm not so sure, because you have as a conjunctive and as a reasonable expectation of personal privacy. And we have said in cases, and the U.S. Supreme Court, I think, has said in cases, the fact that you put up a sign you are being observed does not invade, does not mean that you don't have...
Well, I'm not talking about just a warning sign. I'm talking about a sign that goes a little bit farther and says that by going in, you give your consent.
I know. That's right. But the court has said you just can't post things and say, by doing this, you are losing your reasonable expectation of personal privacy, because that could... just gets rid of everything.
Well, at any rate, none of us are suggesting that they can...
No, but
put
that you do have
things.
The and in there.
Yeah.
Mr. Ballesteri, your opposing counsel made a statement, I hope I didn't take it down wrong, that the statute, which is 944.0205, on its face does not deal with the concept of privacy. Now, I didn't want to debate this, but I want to ask you, in part of your brief, you addressed that, you were just talking to the chief about the reasonable expectation. Is he basically wrong on that?
Yes, I think he is wrong. I think this statute is plainly a privacy statute,
and
on its face.
Because the words without knowledge and consent seem to
indicate that you don't know what's going on, you don't think this is going to happen, you don't expect it to happen, you have a right to privacy. And the whole subject matter of the statute, that what we're dealing with, is something that is a matter of extreme privacy in our culture. I mean, other cultures don't have the same concepts of nudity that we have. But in our culture, in our United States, American, Western culture, we don't go around showing our nude bodies to people in general. We keep them covered. As you sit on the bench, you have robes on. You're not sitting there nude. I'm not standing here nude. I have a suit on. I have several layers of clothing covering my body. That's our society deems the nude body to be a matter of extreme privacy, about as private as you can possibly get.
Mr. Ballesteri, in addition to the language that you would add, Mr. Fay also said that in order to meet constitutional muster, the statute must remove the words other visual representation or reproduction. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't think you have to remove any language from this statute in order to save it. Because I think once you make this statute applicable only in circumstances in which whatever you're making, I can't think of a single word that would cover all of these possible types of use of the naked body, but once you have that statute limited to the situation in which whatever is done under circumstances while the person is nude and has a reasonable expectation of privacy, then I don't think there's any problem with adding the more general words visual representation or reproduction. As I was saying to the Chief Justice a few moments ago in terms of the cartoon, I believe this statute can legitimately prohibit a person from drawing a cartoon if that person is drawing the cartoon of another person while they are nude in circumstances where they have a reasonable expectation of privacy. And of course, visual representation would cover cartoons, drawings, paintings, sculptures, whatever. As long as that's done while the person is in fact nude, and it is a direct visual representation of the person while they are nude in the circumstances where they expect privacy and constitutes an invasion of their privacy, that can legitimately be prescribed under the First Amendment.
One other question. If you add this, you're obviously adding a new element.
That's correct.
So with respect to Mr. Stevenson, what happens? He did not come through with that, through this prosecution with that element.
No, that's correct. But the law is quite clear that when a court gives a statute a limiting construction, That limiting construction can be applied retroactively to anyone whose conduct is nevertheless proscribed by the statute as it has been limited, and that person had reason to believe that their conduct would be prescribed under the limitation. And that's clearly the case here. What Mr. Stevenson was convicted of, what he pled no contest to, was two counts, one in which he climbed up on a roof and photographed his former girlfriend in her bedroom and bathroom. The next night, apparently that his pictures weren't good enough climbing on the roof.
I know that, Mr. Balistrieri, but in our system, doesn't he have a right to contest each and every element? And you've added an element, he's not had an opportunity to contest that.
He's pleaded no contest, first of all. Okay, we're not dealing with a trial.
Right, we'll have no contest to this.
Sure.
But
that's where the concept of notice comes in. We are not expanding a statute here. This isn't the Bowie versus City of Columbia situation where we're giving a statute an unexpected expansion so that there is a question about whether a defendant's conduct comes within the statute as it's expanded. We are talking here about a contraction of the statute. We are making it applicable to less conduct than it is applicable to on its face.
Certainly, but it's an element that if he were to enter a plea of not guilty, the state would have to prove. Correct?
There's no question about that, yes.
And the state has not had to prove this, and he has not had an opportunity to contest it. I mean, what if the facts were that, in fact, she was in on all of this and expected to make a bunch of money? He hasn't had a chance to prove that.
I assume that he would not have pled no contest if that were the fact.
Oh, you assume?
Yes, I do. Because he pled no contest. He admitted the facts.
That was because it wouldn't matter under the old statute.
Well, no, it would matter. It would matter. It would matter a lot because even under the statute as it presently exists, you have the element of non-consent. Now, if his girlfriend had in fact consented to this, there would be no violation of the statute.
Well, then why do you need him as a reasonable expectation of privacy if you've got it covered by consent?
I'm talking about his conduct. Stevenson's conduct is covered by the consent.
But if she doesn't, in this case, if she consented, even though she had a reasonable expectation of privacy, is he guilty or not guilty?
If she consented, he's not guilty.
So what do you need reasonable expectation of privacy? You need one or the other.
Well, there are some circumstances in which a person could have a reasonable expectation of privacy and consent. There are other circumstances. I'm sorry?
Give me an example, please.
Well, the example of this case, one of the counts that was dismissed, the situation where the victim was, well, it's actually not an example in this case. It's not what happened in this case, but I can use it as an example. You're having consensual sex with someone. You're in a bedroom. You have a reasonable expectation of privacy, but you nevertheless consent to have your partner videotape you.
Right.
There you have a situation where there's a reasonable expectation of privacy, but consent. There are other situations in which
is he guilty under those conditions? He took a videotape with consent when the person had a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Well, there was no consent. But in this case, there was no consent.
No, but in the new case you're presenting.
Under the statute as written or the statute
as limited
is the word that I use, not rewritten, limited.
Good try.
Under either one, if there is consent to the videotaping, there's no violation of the statute. Because by consenting, you've waived your reasonable expectation.
That's what I am saying. What do you need that for? You don't need reasonable expectation if you have consent. That's my point. I'm helping you rewrite this so that...
I appreciate your help.
But you're suspicious.
I am. There are other circumstances. There are other circumstances where you do not have consent, but also you do not have a reasonable expectation of privacy. The situation that I talked about a minute ago of the news photograph of the naked Vietnamese girl. She obviously did not consent to have her picture taken. But yet, she had no reasonable expectation of privacy because she was there, nude, in public, with lots of people around, including at least one news photographer. So you have situations where you have one or the other, but not both.
What about somebody taking pictures up at the Mazamani Beach?
I would say clearly that anyone goes to the Mazamani Beach, knows what's going on there, knows they have totally relinquished any expectation of privacy.
So that, again, is an example of where they haven't consented, but nevertheless...
But nevertheless, there's no expectation of privacy.
A different beach. Pick a beach. The Kickapoo Beach.
Well, if it's a public beach, I think the same thing would apply. As applies to the Mazamani Beach. On the other hand, if this is a private beach, you own the land for 3 miles in each direction.
Well, how about the state owns the land for 3 miles in each direction, but there aren't many people around.
But if it's a public beach and anyone can come there, there's no reasonable expectation of privacy, regardless of how many people happen to be there at a particular moment.
Well, I think that persuades me that you don't mean both, because that's true of the Nepal picture, too. She's in a public street. Therefore, you're saying that's an implied consent.
No, I'm not saying that's an implied consent. That is not an implied consent. What I'm saying is there's no reasonable expectation of privacy there. I mean,
A public beach situation, you're saying there is no consent.
There may or may not be consent on the public beach situation. But that's irrelevant because there's no reason to expect privacy.
Counsel, then aren't you, with that argument, really advancing two new elements with your Crawford language? One element being a reasonable expectation of privacy, and the other element, that of being contemporaneously present in the same situation. That is, while the person is nude.
I suppose you could say there are two aspects to it.
The reason I pick up on that is that your opposing counsel set forth, if my notes are correct. Three problems with the existing statute. One was how to correct it. Did you view the person in the place of the privacy? He said something like that. Another one was you need both people at the same place and the same time. And so it seems to me that you've added by this language two new elements. Where's the cutting off? If we added a third element, is that too much rewriting?
I will never agree that this is rewriting the statute.
Is there? Okay, let me use a more neutral change. If we add how many elements as it currently exists in the jury instruction, how many elements are given to do you have to prove in order to prove a defendant guilty as it currently exists in the books?
I think there are two.
Okay, so you're adding two more elements by your Crawford language. One is they have to be at the same place at the same time, and the other deals with expectation of privacy. So now you're doubling the amount of elements, and I want to kind of push you. I probably won't get any place, but let me try it anyway. I mean, so if you've got an existing statute that has two elements, and we're changing it so that there are double the amount of elements, that's not substantial change.
I don't think the question here is whether the change... I don't think you can look at numbers and say, we've got two elements, we're adding two more. I don't think that is the real focus of the inquiry. I think the focus of the inquiry should be on what did the legislature intend.
Well, I guess I harken back, although I don't like to lounge management case, you know, and
well, we don't like you harkening back to that either.
Especially by the author thereof.
But one of the things the majority felt it was faced with is that it was, and Justice Crooks alluded to it very early, I think, in the questioning, there was just so much rewrite. I mean, it arguably covered not just nudity in a dancing place, but all nudity, and not just in a dancing place, but any place that had a license. Now, you can disagree with that, as did the dissent, but I mean, that was, it was just like, yeah, you were rewriting the whole thing. There was a point of no return. And I'm just wondering if adding two elements to an already existing two elements is too much.
Okay, now the critical difference between the new dancing statute and this statute, as the majority indicated in the lounge management case, was that in that case, the legislative body, the town council or whatever, the town council, had indicated in the language of the statute an intent, a specific intent, that the ordinance apply to every possible application of the statute. It intended, the town intended to have that statute to apply to all of the various unconstitutional situations in which that statute could possibly be applied. That is not the case here. We don't have any of that sort of broad language in the statute that indicates an intent of the legislature to have it apply in situations where it cannot constitutionally be applied.
I am not sharp enough yet on the record of lounge management, but I do recall the oral arguments, and at the oral arguments, it was advanced by the attorney on the town, on behalf of the town, that no, what we just want to cover is new dancing in bars. And I remember there was all sorts of questioning by this bench on variations on that theme that took us from bars to hotel rooms with consenting adults, that took us to calendars with nudes, that took us to television programs that depicted nudity. And the council was very persistent. She said, no, we just want this to cover new dancing in this one bar that was established. I mean, in any bar that was established, they're targeting one. So I just raised that up.
Yeah, well,
my recollection of their position is not quite as you're advancing, but
that may have been their position. I wasn't here for the oral argument. I'm going on the basis of what was said in the majority opinion in that case, that there may have been an unexpressed intent asserted by the attorney for the town, but in the statute itself, this court said that the statutory language or the ordinance language itself indicated an intent, a legislative intent, to apply the statute broadly. And that language does not appear in this statute. There is no language in this statute which indicates a legislative intent that the statute be applied to cover all kinds of situations in which the application of the statute would be unconstitutional. In fact, we have a rule of judicial construction that a statute should not be construed to accomplish absurd results. We should not attribute to the legislature an intent to create a statute that would be absurd. And to apply that statute in the circumstances that are litanized in the brief of the appellant in this case would absolutely be absurd. No rational legislature, singular or plural, could have intended the statute to apply in those situations.
Well, but in lounge management, we said they did.
Yes, you did. And that's because of the language that was in the statute, or in the ordinance, in
so
lounge
then,
management.
So then, I hate to say this, but then maybe that particular legislative body, by putting in that language, did intend what you label an absurd result.
They could have. And the other rule of statutory construction is where the legislature clearly expresses its intent, even if it's absurd, the court has to give voice or give view to that intent. And that's what you did in lounge management.
All of which are overridden by the First Amendment.
Well, all of which is construed, has to be construed within the confines and the prohibitions of the First Amendment. Now here by contrast, we've got language in the statute itself which very strongly suggests that the intent of the legislature was to confine the application of this statute to situations in which the right to privacy was invaded. And that is made even stronger by a document in the legislative drafting file, which is part of the legislative history of this statute, which indicates specifically the kind of problem that this statute was meant to address. And that is a concern about an invasion of the right to privacy.
Mr. Bellisferi, on another note, or maybe it's a parallel note, your brief has suggested, and I would certainly agree with some of those suggestions, that the unlikelihood of prosecution in some of these examples is so high as to be nearly absurd, if not in fact absurd. But is that in fact a valid consideration for us? Is the question unlikelihood of prosecution, does that enter into our determination, or is it just the fact that prosecution can result?
No, it doesn't. It does, in fact, the reasonable likelihood of prosecution is in fact one of the elements of the overbreadth analysis.
Did you have a citation for that?
Yeah, it's in here somewhere. Osborne versus Ohio. In fact, a couple of cases. Absent any realistic danger that the statute would be used in a way which compromises First Amendment protections, invalidation for overbreath is inappropriate. Osborne versus Ohio, City Council versus Taxpayers for Vincent, and this court's decision in Jansen. Those are cited at page 10 of my brief. So that definitely enters into the substantial overbreath analysis.
This isn't an overbreath case, but you remember about 8 or 9 years ago, 8 or 9 years ago in the northwest part of the state, I think maybe close to Ashland, where the prosecutor prosecuted a local person for having sex outside of marriage.
Yes, I do remember that case. I remember it well.
Yeah. That gets to the point of, you never know what's going to be prosecuted.
Well, you never know what a district attorney is going to try to prosecute. That prosecution was not successful. It was dropped, if you recall.
Oh, but I guess the person who had to defend it maybe pay money to do that isn't calmed by the fact that it was an unrealistic prosecution.
Well, that may be true, but...
What were the facts of that? Never mind.
While we're talking about this, I would just like to make one point here, and that is that in their reply brief, Stevenson talks about what happens if this court construes the statute. District attorneys aren't going to know about it. They're not going to apply it. That's not a realistic view of the way the prosecution system in this state works. District attorneys already know about this case because we've told them about this case. When this court decides this case, we'll tell district attorneys, every district attorney in this state, that this court has been that this case has been decided. The jury instructions committee will know that this case has been decided, and they will rewrite the jury instruction accordingly. Every DA in this state is going to know about the limitation on the statute, and nobody is going to be prosecuted for it.
Well, what about the person who is going to look at the statute to find out if they can take a photograph or a motion picture?
Well, we presume that people know the law, and the law is more than just what's written in the statute. This is no different. This is no different than any situation where this court construes an ambiguous statute. You do that all the time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bellisferi. Mr. Fay.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state continues to invite the court to go down the slippery slope of judicial legislation. They're asking you to regulate, to create a privacy statute that's fundamentally one based on censorship, based solely on nudity. I am probably going to be the only lawyer, defense lawyer, who quotes Scalia in this term quite so frequently. But what the state is asking you to do is just like Nero. Post the law so high up on the column that the citizens can't figure it out. And that's exactly what they're asking this court to do. They're asking you to save a statute that they admit is unconstitutional on its face by judicially rewriting it. This court has refused to do that in lounge management, in the Janssen case, Czarnecki, the U.S. Supreme Court in excitement video, all of those cases. That is not this court's role to create new elements to the offense. We get into this whole idea of the slippery slope of even the state's language when they insist upon leaving visual representation. Well, if I draw a picture of an individual in their bedroom, nude, without having been there, I still violate the statute.
How do you violate their proffered statute? Because I thought it has this same place, same time element, while the person is nude.
Justice Bradley, I don't see where we have that same time, both of us being in the same place at the same time in that statute. And if we go back to Mr. Stevenson, with one of the other counts that was read in, is, and I come back to the other example, let's assume that he draws a picture about this act of making love. Yes, he was there. She probably never thought that he would draw a picture and show it to his buddies in the locker room.
But arguably that's not covered under his proffered language. I'm referring to, of his brief, I'm sure you've seen it, pages 13 to 14. Other than the argument of court, don't be a super legislature. Do your job and let them do theirs. Is there anything that's with this new language that you would say remains unconstitutional?
Yes, when we include the language of visual representation.
Explain that to me, because in your hypothetical, you were saying that there was the drawing, but he wasn't there. And my sense is, while that person is nude, means the drawing is done while the person is nude, in his proffered language. So.
But that's all it says. It says, depicts a person nude while that person is nude in circumstances. So all the statute says is, if you depict them nude where they are in circumstances, where that nude person, the person depicted nude, would have an expectation of privacy.
You mentioned the excitement video case. I thought in that case that U.S. Supreme Court did, in fact, read in an element to save obscenity statute. Scalia said
so
that they shouldn't have, but
Scalia,
part of your Scalia reference.
Right. That was a misspeak, Your Honor.
Counsel, if we would take out, I'm just exploring this, visual representation, then as drafted on 13 and 14, is that subject to any constitutional defect?
Well, then you might as well, you still don't solve it because of reproduction. Because what happens if I take a video with the consent of the individual, of me and this individual making love, and lo and behold, I move on to a different relationship, and that individual makes a photocopy of it, or makes another video of it. It's over and over and over again. When you leave the language in of reproduction, and you leave the language in of visual representation, and you add the state's language, maybe then you can get there. But we are so far down the slope. And these are penal statutes. These are statutes where people are convicted of felonies. The lawyers have the right, and all of the people who have been prosecuted since, have the right to look at a statute and look at it and say, this is what it means. What it says clearly on its face.
What if two people engage in sex, and one of them tells me about it, and I then draw a picture of it, obviously without the consent of these people, and obviously at a time when they had a reasonable expectation of privacy. Would I, if those words, visual representation, reproduction, stay in the statute, would I be in violation of the statute?
I believe so, Your Honor. Because you are still depicting them nude without their knowledge.
And without their consent.
And without their consent.
And at a time when they reasonably expected privacy.
And at the same time that they had a reasonable expectation of privacy. That's the whole problem with this statute. When we come back to the conflict between privacy and the First Amendment, there has to be some clarity and some precision in the drafting of it. And that is the role of the legislature.
Can I ask a question? If the statute is declared unconstitutional, what happens to the videotape here? Could it be reproduced by Mr. Stevens?
I think it could, Your Honor. However, it would then expose him to the civil liability under the privacy statute as it's currently written.
What section number is that?
I don't know it off the top of my head. I think it's like 893 something.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you, Mr. Fay. Thank you, Mr. Bellisferri. That concludes our hearing on 98-2110 CR, and we will be in recess.